Coming up on Fronteras, Arizona's Maricopa County Sheriff's Office is under a court order to prevent racial profiling, but it comes with a price tag in the tens of millions of dollars.
This is what it costs to have a sheriff that is this detached, this incompetent.
A look at the cost of compliance and who should pay. By some measures, Mexico might have some of the fastest internet speeds in Latin America. But for Tijuana's ambitious tech entrepreneurs and aspiring professional gamers, it's still painfully slow.
It doesn't crash, but the quality is super bad. If I had better quality, I would probably have more viewers.
That story and more, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. Immigration reform was not at the forefront of President Obama's State of the Union address, but it is believed by some members of the administration to take shape this year. From our Fronteras desk, Joey Palacio spoke to Labor Secretary Thomas Perez on how an altered immigration system could shape the country's labor force.
Immigration reform got a hearty nod from President Obama during his State of the Union address. He went as far as saying that it would shrink deficits by $1 trillion over the next two decades. Labor Secretary Perez agrees, saying that migrant workers would be a critical engine for economic recovery. He says that it's time to bring people out of the underground economy.
They can't realize their highest and best dreams, and we need to move them out of the shadows and into the sunshine. And when immigration reform passes, and I again underscore when, and that when is sometime this year, the high-tech sector will have access to more opportunities to grow their businesses.
He adds that a re-envisioned rational farm worker program would minimize exploitation. Among some of the short-run challenges, he says that visas should be expanded to allow for additional high-skilled labor to be led into the country. In San Antonio, I'm Joey Palacios.
When federal courts get involved with local police departments, the price tag can soar. In Arizona's Maricopa County, an outside monitor is now in place to ensure Sheriff Joe Arpaio and his deputies comply with a court order to prevent racial profiling against Latinos. That's just one of many reforms coming to one of the most well-known departments in the country. And those changes are starting to add up. From Phoenix, Jude Jaffe Block reports.
The Maricopa County Sheriff's Office isn't letting reporters come on ride-alongs these days. But Sergeant Chris Dowell agreed to talk with me in his department SUV about how the court order will change the way the Sheriff's Office operates.
The supplemental order is 59 pages. I've read the supplemental order 20 times.
Dowell is part of a small team tasked with the complicated job of compliance. So what's in those 59 pages? For starters, how deputies make traffic stops is changing.
We do not inquire about their immigration status.
Deputies must go through new training to prevent racial profiling and...
Every traffic stop will be documented. It'll be documented, hopefully digitally, if we can get the technology to move along quickly.
The first round of mandatory changes will take effect at the end of March, when deputies will have to record the length and reason for making a traffic stop, as well as their impression of the driver's race or ethnicity. Eventually, deputies or patrol cars like the one we're in now will be outfitted with video cameras, and the department will put a new system in place to monitor deputy discipline and performance. Actually, Dowell is excited about that last bit.
Those are things we wanted to move into, we just didn't have the money for, so now we're going to be able to move into it. This order is going to allow us to move forward a lot quicker than we would have been able to do.
All this at an estimated $22 million for the first year and a half, plus an annual $10 million for the next 5 years. Add to that about $9 million in attorney's fees for the drawn-out legal battle that brought all this on. Given how tight county finances have been lately, it's possible this expense could lead to cuts in other programs. Denny Barney chairs the County Board of Supervisors.
We're all operating from the same checking account. It's the taxpayers' money. And frankly, We're going to continue to work hard to balance doing everything that we're mandated to do from the state.
The court forces them to invest and fix themselves, even if they don't want to.
University of Pittsburgh's David Harris studies court-ordered changes at police departments. He says though reforms are expensive up front, they may prevent more costs down the line, such as lawsuits from people who think they've been mistreated by officers. And Maricopa County Sheriff's Office has had its share of those. Harris says the order has the potential to make one of the country's most controversial law enforcement agencies first rate.
If the leadership of the department and the municipalities it serves have invested themselves in it rather than resisting it, what you will have is a department that will be remade.
I think this is a bargain, $22 million, given everything that's happened.
Randy Parras is one of Sheriff Joe Arpaio's harshest critics. He ran an unsuccessful campaign to recall the sheriff after his 2012 reelection.
This is what it costs to have a sheriff that is this detached, this incompetent, someone who's this incapable of really adopting policies that are within the law.
But in a recent letter to the U.S. Attorney General, Arpaio said county taxpayers shouldn't have to pick up the tab. He says federal agents taught his deputies the very practices that prompted the court's intervention, so the federal government should pay for the reforms. For his part, Parras has his own equally unlikely idea of where the money should come from, Arpaio's campaign chest.
He was able to raise money on these practices of going after Latinos and immigrants. He raised money from a lot of races across the country. We should be able to use that money to pay down this debt.
In fact, just this month, Arpaio announced his campaign war chest got a $3.5 million bump in 2013. That's a new fundraising record for a county politician. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
In San Diego, Police Chief William Lansdowne has pronounced sweeping changes in the way his department combats racial profiling. He addressed the City Council's Public Safety Committee Wednesday in response to concerns brought to light in a recent KPBS and Voice of San Diego investigation. Speak City Heights reporter Megan Burks has more.
Lansdowne shared the microphone with nearly 30 community members who said they believe they've been racially profiled by San Diego police officers. Nation of Islam minister Hugh Mohammed and others who work and live in southeastern San Diego praised Lansdowne for his renewed attention to the issue, but urged for meaningful change in the way officers conduct business.
All of our young people are not gang members. It's a small amount that create bad. And I know it's not all the police officers, but just like we want to deal with the young ones that's creating a problem, we expect the police department to deal with those that are creating that problem.
Chief Lansdowne had already renewed a department effort to collect racial data at traffic stops. Now he's asking the committee for up to $200,000 to test body cameras, often called cop cams.
That was Megan Burks reporting from San Diego. Scientists working in Central America have discovered an unexpected consequence of the drug war, deforestation. From Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
A group of researchers who just published in the journal Science found drug traffickers slashing rainforest to carve clandestine landing strips, roads, and large cattle ranches to launder their drug money in the middle of remote rainforests. Northern Arizona University scientist Eric Nielsen has been doing research in Honduras and Guatemala on forest carbon for two decades.
What really blew me away was coming back and seeing, you know, very large clearings that are, you know, cattle pasture, which would be unheard of because the indigenous people don't raise cattle and they don't clear big swaths of forest because it takes a lot of money.
Ohio State University professor and lead author Kendra McSweeney was noticing the same alarming rate of deforestation where she was doing research on climate change. She and Nielsen decided they needed to switch their research focus, so they spoke to the indigenous communities who live in the forest and discovered narco traffickers were to blame.
The war on drugs has caused a lot of human suffering, particularly in terms of gang-related violence and cartel-related violence in the Southern Hemisphere. But what we don't recognize is that it's also causing other forms of violence.
This is happening in a World Heritage Site, a place that has the same protected status as the Grand Canyon. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
Politicians in Chihuahua, Mexico, and West Texas have announced that a long-awaited rail connection linking large Mexican ports in Sinaloa and Michoacán to Texas will break ground in 2015. Fronteras correspondent Lorne Madelon of Marfa Public Radio reports.
This freight train is passing through Marfa, Texas, westbound, carrying car parts and furniture on its way to Los Angeles. Until 2006, this east-west route used to complement a north-south freight line connecting Mexico with Texas. It was called the South Orient Express. But reviving the line's been blocked by red tape and the difficulty of easing trade on the border in a post-9/11 world.
We'll be able to have engineering start this year, with construction starting in 2015.
Judge Paul Hunt is the chief elected politician in Presidio County, Texas. He was with a U.S. delegation that welcomed Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto in November when he told citizens in Ojinaga, just across from Presidio, Texas, that improving rail and road connections was critical to reviving a bilateral economy that's been stalled along this part of the Texas-Mexico border.
There is one bottleneck for making that a reality, one big bottleneck, and that's that the bridge needs to be restored. Once we get the bridge across the Rio Grande there at Presidio restored, then I think you'll find that the upgrades necessary to gradually increase the efficiency of that line will start to happen. But right now it's stopped cold at the river.
Hunt says Texas and the International Boundary and Water Commission, that's the permanent group that governs border water issues and all international crossings, well, they're working out the details on the specs for a new rail link. So keen are Mexican politicians that the governor of the state of Chihuahua, Cesar Duarte, recently pitched Asian investors on building locomotives along the border, part of an infrastructure initiative that both Duarte and Peña are currently pitching to their respective levels of government in Mexico. The South Orient Express once connected to a rail line in Mexico at the International Bridge at Presidio and Ojinaga. Fire destroyed a portion of the rail bridge in 2008. The next year, a second section of the bridge was also scarred by fire. Marfa, Texas City Councilor David Beebe has lobbied for a restored rail line at Presidio Ojinaga. He recently saw the results of a preliminary study compiled by stakeholders in Texas.
It has been deemed to be worth doing, which is a major, major step. That's a step that we never thought would happen 5 years ago. I didn't think it would happen, and we always were crossing our fingers for it. Now the key is to be the people who knock on the door, say, hey, when's it coming? What do we have to do next?
Presidential orders from Washington and Mexico City might be next. They're needed to get construction underway, and it appears that will happen once the International Boundary and Water Commission finishes its work. I'm Lorne Madelon in Marfa, Texas.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. By some measures, Mexico may have some of the fastest internet speeds in Latin America, but for Tijuana's ambitious tech entrepreneurs and aspiring professional gamers, it's still painfully slow. That story and more after the break. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. A Texas university program aimed at informing and assisting young immigrants eligible to obtain a deferred action status is expanding its reach to South Texas. From our Fronteras desk, Joey Palacios reports.
An estimated 1.7 million undocumented young people in the U.S. are eligible for deferred action for childhood arrivals, according to Pew Research. Since late 2012, the DACA project at the Center for Legal and Social Justice at St. Mary's University has assisted 200 people in obtaining DACA status, which puts off removal or deportation proceedings. Adrian Meneses, a supervising attorney for the project, says they're now shifting focus outside of San Antonio and into the Rio Grande Valley in West Texas. That's thanks to a $100,000 grant from the Texas Access to Justice Foundation. Many of the undocumented in the area are unable to cross the border checkpoints to make it to San Antonio.
So we're going to conduct outreach into schools and churches and community organizations so that we can meet with people where they feel safe and they can get information about DACA and other topics from us, and we can minimize their travel and their risk.
The grant will pay for three paralegals to work on the project. They hope to locate and help 1,000 new applicants. In San Antonio, I'm Joey Palacios.
Newly released Kids Count data show that about two-thirds of American fourth graders don't read proficiently. As Carrie Young reports, with the exception of Colorado, states in the Southwest fared among the worst in the nation.
According to the latest study, New Mexico claimed one of the bottom spots in the national ranking, with almost 80% of third-grade students reading below their grade level. Veronica Garcia is the executive director of New Mexico Voices for Children. She says a student's ability to read proficiently impacts more than just school performance. Low literacy rates can exacerbate state poverty levels and contribute to larger economic issues.
If you're not reading by that grade level, the likelihood of graduating from high school decreases significantly. If you do not graduate from high school, then your earning potential goes down. If we do not have a literate population, it makes it more difficult to attract high-wage jobs.
The study also shows that the proficiency gap between higher and lower-income students widened over the last decade. Nationally, students of lower-income families were about 1.5 times less likely to read proficiently than those from higher-income families. In Albuquerque, I'm Carrie Young.
By some measures, Mexico may have some of the fastest internet in Latin America. But for Tijuana's ambitious tech entrepreneurs and aspiring professional gamers, still painfully slow. They know much faster connections lie just across the border and feel like Mexico's telecom giants are holding the city back. From member station KPBS in San Diego, technology reporter David Wagner explores what it would take for Tijuana to truly cross the digital divide.
La destrucción está cerca.
In the super popular online video game League of Legends, Gustavo Leyva is known as Hacker. And when I say he's known, I mean he's known.
Like, your Facebook page has how many likes?
11,000.
So you have 11,000 people who think you're really good at this.
Yeah, they think.
Playing as Trindamir, the barbarian king, Leyva has competed throughout Mexico, in Chile, and even in Germany. And he's cleaned up nicely, too.
Like, recently, how much money has this brought in for you?
Probably, like, 7K last year, from, like, July to, like, December.
Leyva is striving to become a full-time pro, but one formidable foe stands in his way. Internet service in Tijuana. Average connection speeds in Mexico lag far behind those in the U.S. and in other countries where pros thrive.
I actually live in San Diego, so there's like a huge difference. It's the same amount of, like, you know, money-wise, and you don't get the same service or speed.
One way pros make money is by streaming their games so fans can watch. Hundreds of people tune in to see Leyva eviscerate his opponents, but his connection sometimes buckles under all the traffic.
It doesn't crash, but the quality is super bad. If I had better quality, I would probably have more viewers.
And internet service isn't just an issue for hardcore gamers. It's also a thorn in the side for Tijuana's emerging tech economy. Many of the scrappy startups here are based inside the Bit Center. It's a very modern-looking complex with huge open spaces, concrete walls, and sleek, colorful furniture. Claudio Ariola is the director, and he has a startup of his own. He recalls one of the times when shoddy internet connections hurt his business.
That was a Skype conference call between a partner in Mérida in Yucatan and one in Madrid. There was no way the whole day that we could have this in Skype. If it was not my internet, it was the one at Mérida's. There was no way we could do it. And that was like a half-hour meeting that we could have and solve a lot of issues, and that was to try to make a proposal for a customer. Well, that never happened.
On top of dropped meetings, Ariola says he can't even sell his products in Mexico. His company makes web-based communication tools for small to mid-sized companies. But in Mexico, Ariola says those kind of companies can't rely on web-based tools because they can't rely on the web.
We decided, you know, don't spend too much time involved with the Mexican market until that is solved. Let's go after the U.S. or market and other countries, because where they can implement a software as a service product right away without being concerned about having a bad internet connection.
Historically, most of Mexico's telecom lines have been owned by one man, Carlos Slim, the richest person in the world. But in recent years, the Mexican government has been trying to break up Slim's monopoly. Tijuana still has only two providers in town, and Ariola says they both charge too much. But let's put this in perspective. Mexico is hardly in the dial-up dark ages. They're basically on par with U.S. speeds circa 2007.
Within the Americas, they're doing fairly well. In looking at a global assessment, they're kind of middle of the pack.
That's David Belson. He works at Akamai Technologies, a company that monitors global internet traffic and ranks countries by speed. Belson says by some measures, Mexico has the fastest internet amongst all the Latin American countries' Akamai surveys, and they've only been getting better.
Over the last 6 years, the average connection speed in Mexico has more than tripled. Could it be better? Absolutely. But is it horrible? No.
Still, for heavy internet users who straddle the border, speeds in Mexico can be more than frustrating.
So do you think it would be easier to be an aspiring professional gamer in the States just because the infrastructure is better?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
For those who only want to check email, watch videos, scroll through Facebook, the difference across the border won't seem very stark. But if you're like Gustavo Leva and you're looking to do some serious damage online, a slow connection could be your downfall. In San Diego, I'm David Wagner.
The recent tax hike in Tijuana has hit pet owners especially hard. KPBS reporter Helen Hawes tells us how pet owners and animal rescue groups have responded.
Pet food in Mexico used to be tax-free. Now pet owners are paying a 16% tax on pet food, a product that was already more expensive in Tijuana than it is in the U.S. Dog rescuers in the area feel the burden and fear the added expense will cause more animals to be abandoned or neglected. Richard Massa is president of the Friends of the Tijuana Humane Society, which offers free dog food for rescuers and medical care for poor pet owners. He describes the problem.
From our meeting with the director of the PETA, he feels that there are at least 100,000 that would need some attention or another. They're either loose on the streets or they're chained up in vacant lots.
One Tijuana resident I spoke with owns two Labradors. With the greater cost of dog food, she said she'll only be able to keep one. Other groups are already seeing the result of the dog tax on the kinds of dogs found abandoned in the city. Josh Pratterth, the director of Baja Dog Rescue, says he runs the largest no-kill shelter in Tijuana.
We're seeing larger dogs on the street more. Bigger dogs are consuming more food, so it's more costly to have a bigger dog. They want a smaller dog, so the cost is less on a weekly or monthly basis for them.
Baja Dog Rescue is crossing the border to find new homes for abandoned pets. Helen Hawes.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations, KNAU Flagstaff, KRWG Las Cruces, KNPR Las Vegas, KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KUAZ Tucson, KXWT West Texas Public Radio, KRTS Marfa, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. Find us on Facebook and join the conversations there. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our main handle is @FronterasDesk. You may subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.